Welcome back to another episode of Golden Brick Road. Jackson and I are here for you in this very emotionally tumultuous time following Sunday night's Golden Globes, recording the day after.
Are you still drunk? Because I am.
I'm not drunk, but I kind of feel like it. Like, I feel like I'm looking at this list and I can't believe that any of this had happened. But it did. As you no doubt know by now, if you are taking the time to listen to this, the Golden Globes really went their own way on Sunday night. And it's, I wouldn't call it bad. I would just call it very, very bold, I guess. Very different.
That's a word.
Yeah.
I don't know how, if I was to give one word to it, I would honestly just say exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that, I mean, I said a little bit earlier when I posted something on Instagram, I mean, it was a hot mess. I think we can all agree on that. But yeah. I think like what ultimately happened was exciting because, and we're going to get into this a little bit later, but it's still a very wide open race, mm-hmm. which I think we were all expecting to have some sort of closure, and now we do not. I think there might be closure in two categories, and I think the two categories that we have closure in were the ones that I thought could have gone a very different way, but they didn't, and they went, I think, the way people had planned.
Yeah, I think that we really went in thinking things would go a certain way, but that other things would pivot towards the narrative we were familiar with. And almost the opposite happened, where the things that were established other places, but that we didn't expect the Golden Globes to echo, the Golden Globes did echo. The Golden Globes, the least Nomadland-y show ever, picked Nomadland for best drama. And I think we both thought that was going to go to something flashier. And that was, that was really impressive. But then at the same time, they chose Jodie Foster, who's very much on the outs as a contender and supporting actress, to win. And then Andra Day, who's, both of us had her in our currently listed final five for best actress. But of course, there's a lot of time between now and the Oscars. But she won. And she beat some real heavyweights. And it's pretty surprising.
Yeah.
Let's hone in on that moment for a bit. That is, it is a very infuriating moment because I hadn't watched the movie yet and it was the only one of those that I hadn't seen. And then also, I was very frustrated that my beloved Frances McDormand or our beloved Carey Mulligan didn't get it. I think we both expected it to go to one of those two. But then I really enjoyed how varied the reactions were, like among the other nominees, because they did a very uncomfortable thing during this virtual ceremony. At least I thought it was uncomfortable. You have this Zoom camera on you if you're a nominee, and then they just like show your face the entire time the other person is giving their speech. And Viola Davis and Vanessa Kirby seem genuinely really thrilled for Andra Day. Like, I don't know if maybe they just didn't think that they had a chance to win or whatever, but they seem very genuinely excited, especially Viola Davis. And then Frances McDormand, of course, did not attend. So there's just this static image of Fern from Nomadland looking unimpressed and smoking. And then we had Carey Mulligan, who rightfully so looked a little ticked. She gave a polite clap, but then as it went on, she just was sitting very still and was not feeling it. And I was like, I'm with you. This should have been you. I don't know. What did you take away from that moment?
I was just expecting something completely different. I didn't think of a scenario where it wasn't going to be Frances McDormand or Carey Mulligan winning. I don't think anyone really dreamed up that Andra Day could win. I mean, her film has just come out on last Friday. So the general public probably just said, who is this? Like, who is this woman? Like, they might know her music, but they were like, oh my gosh, someone's playing Billie Holiday. Well,
yeah, there's okay. a new Billie Holiday movie out. I guess I better go see it, except I can't go anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I think it was, I think I was in that sort of like Carey Mulligan shock where like, I wasn't happy for Andra Day because I haven't seen the movie. And so I can't be like, oh yeah, like she did a great job or anything like that. I was just like, I was kind of just like her, like, she just like had her hands out in the air.
Yes,
and she was like,
she
oh my gosh.
It was so genuine. Oh my gosh. It was great.
Which, I mean, that's exciting to me. But I mean, we look at this now from a long-term picture, and she's not nominated for a SAG award. And if we look at the voting body for the Academy Awards, when it comes to the nominations and the winner, that's going to be more in line with the SAG body than the Golden Globe body. Like the Golden Globe body is 85 individuals. The SAG body is much larger, and the Oscars is only larger and comprised of completely actors and actresses. So it's I mean, good for her. Like it's a truly Golden Globes news where you're just like, oh cool, she won. But now to see it in the long-term picture, it kind of like boggles your mind, like, well then who's gonna win the SAG? Like, is it going to be Viola? Is it going to be Carrie? Is it going to be Frances? Like, those are all extremely well-liked actresses. So it's hard, like it's still hard for me to grasp that situation and the Jodie Foster of it all. I mean, I was so excited to see Jodie Foster just like in her PJs with her dog and her wife just sitting there on the couch looking lovely. But then to see like the genuine shock and surprise of winning, like everyone had a different picture. Everyone saw Amanda Seyfried winning or Glenn Close possibly winning. Mm-hmm. So now it's just another wrench in the plan where we don't know what's going to happen. And I mean, it's also worth mentioning that she's not nominated for a SAG. That
right.
Is,
same thing with Andra Day. We have two winners that can't possibly repeat. And what awards people and movie people, there are two things that awards people / film people claim they love but hate when they actually arrive. And those are a really difficult, challenging movie and a surprise at an award show. Because it's like we all want a surprise and we're so hyped for it and they are exciting, but then they make predicting off of that so hard. Like what's so hard about, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, but even throwing supporting actor in is that when these lineups are different, we don't know what the competition really looks like because it's different people competing against each other in different combinations. And then when you throw into that it's not even one of the front runners or one of the quote unquote locks winning, that it's an outlier, it's like, holy crap, what does this mean? And I'm trying to really just embrace the chaos and love it, but it was shocking, is like, as dramatic as that is, one of the best words for it.
You
mentioned Jodie Foster in her pajamas. That was honestly maybe my favorite look of the night. That's what I would have done if I was going to be on camera for the Globes like that, is I would have worn some really chic PJs and like done my hair and my face, like washed my face, made sure I looked somewhat presentable, but not gone the full mile. Cause I feel like you got to feel really silly after your category's up in a look like that. But I mean, they had so much fun with it. It was cool to see.
Yeah. I mean, I think if it was me, I think I would pull like a Kaylee Cuoco where their Instagram for like 24 hours is just like pure glam. Mm-hmm. And then like right before everyone has gone to bed, posting truly like the perfect picture to encapsulate like the Globes and her sitting on the ground eating pizza. With I think like a very large thing of whiskey on like, the side of her and Gigi's cupcakes like to her feet, and a dog I think was in the picture. Maybe not. But her hair extensions were in her lap, and I was
it was just iconic.
Yeah. So I'm just like, I'd rather see that. Like that's what I've been missing so much about award shows. And I think when it came to the Globes last night, I was just yearning for something else when it came to like fashion. Like we got some arguably like fantastic looks from some people.
Yeah.
I think Cynthia Erivo looked amazing.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to mention. That lime green dress with those gloves, like it was so fun. It was just a really camp but glam.
Yeah,
that was one of my favorites of the night as well.
And she couldn't have done that in any other year. So it's just like, why not put on like silver platform high heels and just go for it? Like, I think everyone just went for it. Like,
Jamie Lee Curtis in this like incredibly form-fitting, gorgeous yellow dress, canary yellow. Like, she looked great. And again, it was just a really fun moment of like, oh, that's Jamie Lee Curtis. I haven't seen her in a while since the great Halloween reboot. And she looks incredible. And that was a really cool one as well.
Yeah, it's just a reminder that, oh, hey, like people can dress up. Like we can do this again when it's possible.
Yeah.
So that was truly like there were like, I probably have like a top five moments, but just having some sort of fashion moment, even though it was probably 10 people who like came to dress, like that just excites me, because that means, okay, we're almost at the end of this. If people are dressing up for, like, I remember when the Emmys were coming around and it was just a joke, like Regina King, like she was wearing something very political that day. I think she was, I can't remember if it was like a Black Lives Matter shirt or one of the names of one of the...
Yeah, I think it was like a Breonna Taylor t-shirt or something like that. Yeah.
So that was a much more political show, where this felt more chaotic and more, I mean, very much Golden Globes-y. Like this was a Golden, like you asked for a virtual Golden Globes award show, you got it. Because it was just insane from the beginning. Like the fact that the first person who wins an award, Daniel Kaluuya for Judas and the Black Messiah, and the mic is muted, and for 5 seconds, it's just like Laura Dern standing there just like, so we don't know what's going on, so we might just move on to the next category. And then Daniel's like, no, you had me on mute.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that is truly like Globes to a T when it comes to...
And I love that their solution was not, we're going
to
give this guy who's the first awardee of the night, like you just said, a chance to speak. We're just going to move on. And he's like, I love when he popped back in. His first thing he said was, you did me dirty. He said it about 6 times. It was so funny. And I love that they like, that was their solution was, oh, well, we'll just skip him. Like, no, come on, give him a chance. They also were very trigger happy with that. And this always drives me crazy, but they were very trigger happy with the playing you off music. And of course it's the Golden Globes, so they care even less than the Oscars about the non-beautifuls, the non-specials who are the producers and the directors and all of that stuff. But like, I felt like, especially once we got to about 8:30, they were just playing people off like that. And that was frustrating to me, because I just feel like a songwriter deserves just as much time as a cinematographer, who deserves just as much time as an actor. So you mentioned Daniel Kaluuya, and let's talk a little bit about supporting actor. Do you feel like this is the start of a sweep? Do you feel like how much emphasis do you place on, or significance do you place on this win for him last night?
Yeah, so I think the Daniel Kaluuya narrative to me is probably sewn up. I can't really think of a different outcome now. And it's the same with like best actor for me. I think if this was the time to show a different narrative or to present something else, it was going to do that. I mean, if we were going to do like a true like Aaron Taylor Johnson thing, it would have happened last night with Jared Leto. But maybe that was the Andra Day thing. Maybe that was like the one.
Jodie Foster. Yeah.
Or the Jodie Foster. I'm just going to find it really, really, I mean, and sorry to bring it back to Andra Day, but just like, I'm going to find it very, very hard to see her having the legs to take this all the way to the end. But with Daniel Kaluuya, I mean, he's obviously showing up more and more now where he's doing these interviews, he's getting out in the press. He still has this sort of interesting narrative around the film where people love his performance, but don't love the movie as much. And I think that's solidifying more and more every day, which is unfortunate, but I mean, I guess it's good for him. Like, I don't think there's any other narrative that will really come out of Judas and the Black Messiah at this point. I could be wrong, but I think, like, I know you want to see Paul Racy come in at the Oscars. So I think how we look at the supporting actor race going forward is who are the other four more than who is going to win. At least that's like my prediction at the end of this. I'm sort of settled into that one. I'm settled into best actor. The rest are just up in the air. And that even goes for best picture, but we'll obviously talk about that in a bit.
Yeah, let's bookmark those two because I do want to talk about both of them. My only pushback, and it's not even really a pushback, it's just a gut feeling on supporting actor, is that it still feels soft to me, and it has nothing to do with the quality of his performance, which we can both agree is a high quality performance that I would not be surprised at all to win an Oscar. You mentioned when we talked about the movie last week that there are a ton of clips that are made to be played right before he accepts an Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
In Judas and the Black Messiah. But I think because of how much movement there is and how much wiggle room there is in that five, and how each precursor continues to go their own way, I guess I'm saying that while I'm still going to pick him for the SAG, I would not be surprised if the SAGs go with someone else. I would not be surprised if the Critics' Choice, well, no, the Critics' Choice are definitely going to pick him. But I wouldn't be surprised if the SAG goes with someone else. And then who knows what the final five at the Oscars is going to look like. I have abandoned my hopes that Paul Racy could win. I have given up. I've made my peace with God about it. I'm still very heartbroken, but whatever. But I do completely agree with you that best actor, especially after that incredible speech from Chadwick Boseman's widow, it just felt like a dust off your hands, it's done moment. Like,
yeah.
There's nothing else that will happen for the rest of the season. I do think that Anthony Hopkins will probably win the BAFTA, but other than that, I think that there's not a chance in hell that he doesn't win the SAG next week, that Boseman doesn't win the SAG, not next week, but next month.
Yeah, and I would agree. I think that, I mean, I'm forgetting which podcaster said this. Oh, it's actually Mike Hogan from Little Gold Men. He said that like the Golden Globes is always that the audition speech for the Oscars. And I completely agree. And unfortunately, I didn't find a lot of great speeches last night. I thought Jane Fonda's was spectacular.
Absolutely.
And, but I mean, granted, she was winning the Cecil B. DeMille Award. And I mean, she was there with a look, with great hair, with a mic, like she knew that she was coming there to make a statement. But really one of the only ones that actually stood out to me was Chadwick Boseman's wife. Like when she sat there for like that 1 minute and 30 seconds just saying, "I think he would say this," or he might have said this, but we'll never know because he doesn't live here, or he's not alive anymore. But this just means to hold on to your loved ones closer and closer. And I mean, that was an amazing speech. And I couldn't imagine having to give a speech like that, where you're still in mourning and you're having to just sit there with a camera staring right at you in the face, and you have to say something right on the dot. Like,
you have to look beautiful
for everyone else.
It's like you have the Hollywood pressure, and she's not a Hollywood person. And yeah, she really rose to that moment in a very impressive way.
Yeah. I think another person whose speech, while brief, I still think both times were fantastic, was Chloe Zhao.
Absolutely.
With her director's speech and her best picture speech. I mean, do a contrast with Chadwick Boseman's Wife, where here comes Chloe Zhao with a teacup, braids in her hair, and I think a t-shirt with like little daisies on it.
Yeah.
But every time she speaks, I'm so captivated by what she's, by every move that she makes. And I think if this had been a different year and she was having to play long ball and having to play to like a more like in your face crowd, that it might not have played out as well for her. And we might've been seeing an Aaron Sorkin or a David Fincher winning last night. And I think, to me, last night also showed up the director. I don't know about you. I know you were happy, like ecstatic that she won. But for me, at least, I'm completely sold on the Chloe Zhao narrative from this point going forward. And it'll be very interesting when the DGAs come out with their nominees, who's going to be nominated.
Yeah, I completely agree with all that. I think that it is a very key takeaway to say that this season benefits Nomadland and benefits Chloe Zhao and benefits Frances McDormand so much, because Chloe Zhao does not have the bombastic personality of a Spike Lee or the intense suaveness of a George Clooney, that ability to work a room or whatever that we know of. I mean, it's not like she's a Luddite or anything. Like, she's incredibly intelligent. She's really great at expressing the message of her art and the intent of her art. She's very good at it. But, you know, she's also so quote unquote unproven, even though she's made two great movies before this. But the fact that she's made a movie that takes you out of yourself and into the open West of America, and these huge vistas and everything, I think really helps. And then I think also the fact that everyone is relegated to doing the same thing. Like, George Clooney can't sell The Midnight Sky as hard as he could last year or 2 years ago, because he's having to do it in front of a camera and just sitting in front of a computer. And I think that really hurts other people, but has really helped this movie not seem as small as it is. And I have been so obsessed with Chloe Zhao ever since she and this Hollywood Reporter roundtable, like right at the beginning of January, was interviewed with, among others, Spike Lee, and she slipped up and called him professor, which led to them telling the story of her being one of his students at NYU Film School. And I just was like, holy crap, I just love this person. And she's like, it was so ingrained to call you professor that I had to do it. And then he just immediately said, I just want to say I'm so proud of you. And I was like, woof, that's the narrative that I want for the rest of the season. Then I saw the movie and fell completely in love with it.
And I think back, everyone, oh, ahead. Sorry.
No, good.
I was just going to say, I think everyone also feel like has that love towards Nomadland, and it's especially Chloe Zhao at this point in the race. I think that's what's selling it for them. I think they're just completely sold on her as a person and her just being a genuine filmmaker who makes probably the most simple out of all the potential nominees, and makes it something that is still lasting, like now probably going on 5 months since I've seen the film, and you have like a week under your belt. But I mean, I was even listening to the score this morning, because I was just, I was curious to sort of hear the backdrop again to it all. And I know you're not as fond as of the music, and maybe your opinion has changed since watching the movie and maybe listening to the score, but it feels so of the moment and so of Chloe Zhao. Like it ranges in different instruments and different genres, and it feels like you truly are taking that road trip with someone. And like, as much as any of the other directors are trying to vie for their film to win the best picture, like it's so hard for me to contemplate any other, like at this point too, for the best picture category, like how can someone not pick Nomadland to win?
Well, I want to cycle back and finish answering the questions you levied first, and then I think as far as who is going to win Best Director, I think Chloe Zhao sewed it up. I think she gave two great speeches. And I think the fact that she could win in such a quote unquote hostile environment, an environment that is not meant for a Nomadland to win in, I think that she stomped the yard, and she really, I think it's hers. Yeah. As far as Best Picture, I do think that there's, to use this phrase again, wiggle room, only because of the preferential ballot. And I can see dumb people being like, oh, this movie's boring, and so I'm not only going to not rank it first, I'm going to rank it last. And there are some movies that I feel like will consistently be in that 3-4 spot. But I, at the same time, I feel like, I don't know, that's a whole other conversation, but it is worth having some point soon.
But hold on to your point where you just called it boring. Do you really find, or do you think voters will find it boring?
I think stupid people will. That's because, all I meant was, I think that there are these stupid people who are like, it's just somebody in a van. But like, it to me was not boring for a second. I thought it was absolutely soaring and thrilling. And
well, I think that narrative with Parasite being in a different language, I mean, I think that was everyone's hesitation, and they were like, oh, well, there's no way Parasite can win because it's in a different language. How are we going to get voters to sit down and watch that? But I mean, I don't know. It's just, I'm leaving last night as an optimistic precursor into everything.
A beautiful moment that just sits on its own. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say, cause I think you raise a very valid point of, if Parasite can win, why can't Nomadland win? Parasite had two different things going for it. One was, it was a very, it wasn't a foreign language, but it was a very active, exciting thriller. It had this driving score. It had this really intense plot. And then also it had, and I think this is much more important, it had the required Academy screenings that you had to go to in person. So especially once it was nominated, you had to go sign in on a log in person and go see it, as well as a bunch of other movies. There's a percentage of movies that that you're required to see before you're allowed to vote, before your ballot can count. And so I think that having that kind of ramming down at the throat of people really made people sit up and recognize, oh, this is a great freaking movie, and it shouldn't and doesn't matter that it's in a different language. Now, I don't know the degree to which they have found digital workarounds to that, and that is my biggest fear.
Yeah, but Swanky was not in Parasite, so yeah,
that incredible monologue,
let's hold it there. Where's her supporting actress campaign, people?
Hey, I mean, if she wasn't a, if it was like the kind of Roma narrative of first time actress rather than non-professional actress, I think we'd absolutely be talking about it. And I think it would be a real possibility.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that we do have some real solidification here from the Globes. I think Chadwick Boseman, it's again, it's done. Mm-hmm. Chloe Zhao, it's done. But I think, and Daniel Kaluuya, it's more than likely done. The more I talk it out, the more I'm like, get over yourself, it's done. But
yeah,
we have these frankly non-repeatable wins for best actress and best supporting actress. Maybe Jodie Foster's repeatable, I don't know. That we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Yeah.
And with that, we're going to take a quick break. And then we're going to come back and talk about some of the things we've watched in the past couple weeks. We are back, and we're going to spend the rest of the time in this episode just talking about some stuff that we've seen. I think the first thing we're going to start with is Nomadland. Jackson, you've obviously seen this well in advance of this recording, but I saw it February the 21st, so pretty recently, and it has not left my head for a minute. Like, it is only, my admiration for it has only grown, especially Chloe Zhao's direction and the Frances McDormand performance are so remarkable, as well as many of the ancillary performances from non-professionals. What's kind of your takeaways from Nomadland? What do you think about it?
For me, I think the biggest takeaway is probably just how memorable it is and how long it has stuck with me. I think the longer it continues to gestate and become more well noticed and well positioned in different advertisements and different interview junkets, I only think it's like its strength is going to grow. I actually had it on in the background a few days ago while I was cooking, and I think it's a perfect film. Like, I think there are probably three perfect films that came out in 2020/2021, however you want to position that, and one of them is Nomadland. I mean, it's undeniable what Frances McDormand is. It's almost frightening to see how much of a chameleon she is with her Absolutely. Characters.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, it's just like the direction, the cinematography, like you cannot ask for anything better than what they did. So it still lingers on my mind, even the first watch. And it's I'm not considering what I watched a few nights ago, where I'm just like glancing over at the at the TV when Swanky's talking. Like that's not what's grabbing my attention. It's like, oh my gosh, wait, this is when she's in that setting, or this is that speech or whatever. And I'll just turn around quickly. And I've actually since the score has come out, I've started listening to that much more. And it's such a eclectic, strange thing that I recommend anyone just to put on once. If they hate it, completely understand. But it is it is ranging from I'd have to pull it up, but it's truly just a wonder to see it. And only the mind of Chloe Zhao could probably put that together. So those are my biggest takeaways, which are very similar to yours. I just want more people to see it. And I'm happy that it's on Hulu. I'm happy that it won Best Picture or Best Drama at the Globes, because I mean, that it was the perfect show not to give them that award. It very much could have gone to Mank, or it could have gone to Trial of the Chicago 7, but instead it went to this small thing. So it's not like people are not watching it. It's not like people are not resonating with it. They are. And I think it's just, it's a force to be reckoned with. And I think it will be really hard to beat, especially after the Globes.
Yeah, I think on merit, it's pretty much impossible to beat. Like, there's nothing it's pretty much neck and neck with Sound of Metal for my favorite movie of this year, but it is undeniably the best movie of this year. Like, it is, like you said, a perfect movie. There are no flaws in it. The only quote unquote issue I have with it is a very small one, and I'll talk about that in a second. But what you talked about with Chloe Zhao and what she's come up with, it is one of the most unique movies I've seen in years. Like, it reminds me of a Roma or an Arrival in its uniqueness and its just sheer power. But it's also remarkable in that so many issue movies and so many, frankly, best picture contender type movies feel like medicine. They're either really long, or they're really tough to watch, or they're about really dark subject matter. And this touches on a lot of, you know, challenging psychologically subject matter, but it does so in such a lush and loving and moving way that, because I think Frances McDormand does such a good job of being Fern, you just feel like you're the passenger in her van and you're experiencing all this with her. It never feels like you're manipulated or, you know, and nothing ever feels forced. You mentioned that conversation with Swanky, and that has one of my favorite moments in the movie and in the Frances McDormand performance, because it's different from Fargo, which is this really charming, affable, golden light of a person. And it's different from Three Billboards, which is this incredibly explosive, dialogue-heavy role. This is an almost all reacting character. Like, she has plenty of her own stuff going on for sure, but the moments that really shine are her reacting. And there's this moment when Swanky is telling her some bad news, basically. And the way she says, I'm sorry. And the way that she says it to her is the most, like, it was the most moving and just naturalistic and brilliant part of it. And I just think that what she's tapped into in this movie is, like, it's once in a lifetime and it's something no one else could do. Yeah, but I did mention that kind of there was a wrinkle in it for me, and that actually was the music. Now hear me out. The music, I get it.
Yeah.
It is aesthetically beautiful. Like, it is a gorgeous, it's not a score, it's borrowed music, but it's used very effectively. I just feel like there was emotional heavy lifting being done by the scenery, by the camera work, and by the performances, that putting the music with it was almost like not trusting these other elements. But the more the movie went on, and the more time has gone on since I saw the movie, and based on your recommendation, the more time I've spent with the music on its own, the less that has bothered me. And it's like, even though it's something that I kind of disagree with, I would still say it's a 10 out of a 10 movie. And the fact that a movie this good won the Golden Globe, and then you could immediately, if you wanted to stay up two more hours, you can immediately go from the Globes to your Hulu account and just watch it. That's such a great opportunity for a movie like this. And I really hope, like you said, that people go and watch it.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting, because now we still have around two-ish months until the Oscars. And I don't think we've seen the last of the press junket from them. I know that more is coming. I know that we've seen like the Hollywood Reporter roundtables and the Vogue cover and the New Yorker cover and all these different things. But you think about it, and there's still, like, we have the SAG Awards, which were just announced to be live taped and pre-recorded for the viewers. So I'm very interested in seeing what promotion is done before that and after that. Granted, they aren't up for best ensemble. I mean, there's not much of an ensemble to give them an award for. I mean, some could argue, look at what they gathered together for that film.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, they want to get big names on that Zoom screen, I guess you could say. Like, they want to see, they want to see the Viola Davis. They want to see, they want to see the entire crew around Ma Rainey's. They want to see the entire crew around One Night in Miami. If you're just having Frances McDormand and just sort of a bunch of unknowns, I mean, for film lovers, it would probably be great because they're like, oh my God, Swanky's on TV. What do we do?
Yeah, absolutely.
But for anyone else, it would probably be like, who the hell are these old people and why are they on here?
why are we supposed to care?
Yeah.
It's annoying.
So, I mean, we have a month towards the SAGs, about a month until Oscar nominations are out. So, I mean, the press cycle for them is just starting. And I think it's only going to get stronger as the movie continues to roll out and people are able to watch. So, I'm curious to see what the Critics' Choice, is going to do this weekend. That's a really nice indicator, in terms of, at least, I mean, if anything, it's more press, but it's at least continuing the arc of the Nomadland narrative, which I think we're all happy to see.
Yeah. The one thing that I think we're both worried about with this movie is, does it have legs to get all the way to Oscar night? Because it doesn't have a star that's doing press, and it doesn't have a huge, well, I mean, it's Fox Searchlight, so it's plenty big, but it's tricky. And I think that we both have high hopes for it. I think that the wins on Golden Globe Sunday were pretty major. And I think it will do well at Critics' Choice. I don't know if it's going to win Best Picture, but I definitely think we agree Chloe Zhao is walking away with another Best Director trophy. I can't imagine someone beating her. But while this isn't necessarily a Best Picture, Best Actress contender, you watched something else that you cared a lot about. What was that? And tell me about it.
So I watched I Care a Lot, which stars Rosamund Pike and her Bob.
her serial killer Bob.
Yes, her serial killer Bob. And you know what? There's a lot of discourse around the film. It's actually, according to various articles, that it is the number one movie that has been watched.
Yeah.
Or the most watched film on Netflix, which is fascinating to me, because I thought it could have been a number of other things, like The Old Guard that came out this year. Oh God. I mean, all of the ones that are big.
Well, Trial of Chicago 7.
Well, I mean, I don't know if that would have been the most watched.
Yeah.
I was looking for something that was similar to like Hustlers, like last year, where it was just fun and just heisty and action packed and interesting characters. And I mean, did it hit every note? Absolutely not. But was it fun? Was it a fun 2 hours? Yes. I would put that film on a sick day. I would put that film on while cooking. I mean, I think it's a fun movie. I still think my favorite part of this film is Diane Weiss. And I mean, the fact that we get two of these films, or two Diane Weiss films in the year of 2021 is pretty spectacular, because like, you'd be lucky if she got into book club, like the book club with Jane Fonda.
It does
Fonda.
Feel that way these days.
Yeah. So this year, where she has two very like critic, well, I don't know if people would say that I Care a Lot is critically acclaimed, but to be in two movies where one is a critical darling and one is sort of like a streaming success, it's kind of exciting. And I mean, there were so many other aspects to love. I mean, I just think Chris Messina is quite wonderful. And earlier scene this year in Birds of Prey, which I thought he was great in.
Yeah.
And my first introduction to him was in Sharp Objects. I know people have a much further history back with him, but he was so arresting in Sharp Objects. I mean, I could think about Sharp Objects every day. Anyway, back to I Care a Lot. I just thought it was a fun movie. It was interesting to see that Rosamund Pike won. To be honest, I'm kind of happy that she did.
Yeah,
because
I am too.
I was so confused as to what was going to happen with that category that I was like, oh, well, it could go to Anya Taylor-Joy, or it could have gone to Maria Bakalova very easily. So I was just I was just happy to where it's like, no, it goes to Rosamund Pike, and it's just like, oh, okay, I'm on board. Like, I love her, so I'm happy with it. It probably won't have any other legs besides this, and I'm okay with that because it's just a fun movie, and I think all we need right now is fun movies. And speaking of a fun movie that you watch, it's in a different language, but it's I want to hear your thoughts on Another Round that we've talked about previously on the pod very shortly, but I've been meaning to watch it. It's on my list, but I'm getting there. So tell me about it without spoiling anything.
Oh, do not worry. I would never spoil a movie this good because there's a lot of twists. So Another Round, or Druk, or Druk, I'm not sure how to say it because my Danish, believe it or not, is a little subpar.
Oh, my
fluency is just whoo out the window.
Damn.
But it's the latest collaboration between director Thomas Vinterberg and star Mads Mikkelsen. And there's some other great Danish actors in it whose names I sadly just don't know. But Mads Mikkelsen is a fave of mine. Hannibal is my favorite drama TV show of all time. I loved their previous collaboration, The Hunt, which I previously mentioned was one of my best movies of the decade when I made that list forever ago, which I'd love to do an episode on that at some point. I think maybe in the off season, that could be really fun. But anyway,
side note, viewers.
Yes, yeah, asterisk that.
Take notes and ask us in June when we're tired.
When we're very over the Oscars. Not that that could ever happen. It's about a group of four friends who weirdly they're longtime friends, but they're also all teachers at the same school. And they come across a psychosocial theory experiment that one of them, who's a psychology professor, has read a paper about. And the idea is that this guy is proposing that humans are born or they exist with a deficiency of blood alcohol content. And the ideal blood alcohol content for humans is actually 0.05. So they decide to live this theory out because they're all in various degrees of midlife crisis. And to disastrous, hilarious, tragic, beautiful results. It is a very European drama. Like, it is the new school of European cinema, but it's so good. It's really beautifully constructed and shot. And it really explores the way that alcohol is almost a primal connection to society. In an interview I was listening to recently, Mads Mikkelsen was talking about how some people were fighting back and saying, this is just a recent phenomenon. Why would you feel like you need to explore this? And the director and him were saying, no, you know, alcohol has been around in human society for 7,000 years. And yet we have a very binary way of looking at it, of like, you're either an alcoholic or you're like, you know, temperate and you don't have any. And like, if you're in between, that's like a weird thing that we kind of don't explore. And the idea that it can be harmful and helpful, because, you know, if you have a couple drinks, you do feel emboldened. You do feel like you can, you know, maybe without merit, be a better dancer or ask that person out or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I just think it does a great job of exploring the nuance of our relationship as a 21st century society with alcohol. And that is specific to Denmark in this movie, but I never felt lost or confused by what they were, you know, asserting. And yeah, it was great.
No, that's great to hear. It's definitely on my list. And it's, I mean, I think Mads Mikkelsen is such an interesting character. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he's sort of coming to a little bit more prominence from this film is exciting. And I think, I mean, hopeful that it will get its Oscar, I mean, like get the final Oscar nomination and then an Oscar win.
Yeah.
But beyond that, excited to see what other projects will come from it, because he's been a pretty exciting person to watch, at least on like the press tour, and how much he obviously is gunning for this movie and gunning to see how far it can go. And I think that's exciting, because I, when it comes to foreign films, I think you and I can both agree they can somewhat get overlooked at the Oscars, in terms of like, there's one that makes it sort of like splashy entrance, and then it just carries its way all the way to the Oscars. I think that was the perfect example with Parasite, but that's from like a totally different level. Yeah. But every year there's like one, and Another Round seems to be that one. But at the same time, I think we're also starting to find this narrative that these are definitely films that are worth watching, and that we need to be watching to understand where we are as like, as a society as whole, and as a global community. And I'm really happy to hear that it translated so well over to the like the United States version of like of you. So that's really exciting.
Yeah, I if we were to put it in an awards conversation, I think Mads Mikkelsen deserves an Academy Award nomination for this as much as most of the people who were in contention for Best Actor this year. I don't think it's going to mm-hmm. happen, but he's absolutely fantastic. And it was just really cool to, like you said, to watch a foreign movie that was really intelligent and really artistic, but didn't have necessarily the pretentiousness of like a Michelle Haneke or, you know, like something like that. Like a really,
yeah.
It was an intense and well-made movie, but it wasn't borderline unwatchable, like a lot of people insist on viewing foreign film as.
Yeah, and, it's accessible. It's
exactly, accessible, perfect yeah. word. And yeah. with what you were saying, I would love the conversation, even if just for me, to be better than, oh, there's just one foreign film that I really keep up with a year, because that's where the narrative goes. Like, I would love to challenge myself a bit more to just get out there and throw myself into that deep end. So yeah, I recommend it. It's streaming for like $6 and it was absolutely worth it. Don't have a drink with it though, because I remember picking up my beer a couple times and feeling very weird. Yeah, I was like, oh, I don't know. Maybe, do I have a problem? But I mean, I have a lot of problems, but I don't know that that's one of them. I don't know. Yeah, I know there's some other things that we've watched that we're going to talk about more in the future. I was able to finally see Minari. Oh boy, did that live up to the hype. Is there anything else that you've watched or even that you would recommend to our dear listeners?
Well, I did watch the A24 Saint Maud.
The horror movie, right?
The horror movie. Yeah. I did not like that, so don't go and search that one out. The trailer was more interesting than the film. That's all I will say. Mm-hmm. You are best to find something else. And I feel bad for saying that, because I really wanted to like it. It was just such a slow beginning, middle, and end. Like, there was just not, I mean, yes, it comes to a conclusion, but at the same time, it's like, what the fuck? So mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe I'm not like the horror aficionado who can say, yes, go watch this because of XYZ. But it's just like, as the regular everyday viewer of something, I could not wrap my head around it. So yeah, that's what I've watched recently. What's on my list this week to watch is U.S. vs. Billie Holiday after the Andrew Day win. So hopefully we'll be able to discuss that soon when we discuss Minari.
Yeah, I think that's a great goal. I will try to watch it this weekend as well. Shouldn't be a problem. And yeah, next week we will be back to talk about those two movies and to talk about the BFCA or Critics' Choice Award wins, which always an odd telecast, not always an interesting one, but the wins generally are pretty important for cementing your frontrunner status. And like we said with the Golden Globes, kind of an audition run for the more speeches you get to give, the better, basically. And it'll be interesting to see where these go.
More speeches, better speeches. Come yes, on,
better
people.
Speeches, especially. Come on, people, get it together. I'm trying to win an Oscar here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with that said, we will see, or rather, speak to all of you next week.